Hi everyone, it's Elaine, and it is Thursday afternoon's Parent Success System Coaches Call, and we have a small group today, so we're going to get some, going to be able to spend a little more time getting in depth and doing a little coaching, I hope, and that is all for my introduction. So just to check in with Dave and Rebecca, just since the last call, what's been working for you? What's not been? What do you want to share? Either of you. Dave, why don't we start with you since Rebecca and I have been chatting for a minute.
Gosh, I hadn't been, I've been absent. I just got back from a run, so give me a minute to kind of catch my breath here. I've been absent, meaning I've been gone for business types of things, so I haven't really been around my son that much the past week or so. But the time that we have spent together, you know, I'm just trying to work with him on just spending, I mean, I guess, like if we're spending time with him when I do, he seems to enjoy that. One of the things I read that I thought was kind of interesting, I've kind of looked back, and this has to do with, you know, doing homework, because that's always a challenge for us. But when I or my wife have the opportunity, or take the time, rather, I should say, to sit down with him while he does his homework, it seems to go faster. And,
yeah,
you know, reading an article on the website, I think either this morning or yesterday, I look back and he actually asked, "Hey, Dad, can you sit with me while I do it?" And I'm like, "No, nah, you know, we get busy as adults because, you know, we feel it's very unproductive, at least I do, to sit there and while he does his homework or writes his spelling words." And I'm like, "Well, he doesn't really need my help to write spelling words types of things." But I think it kind of helps him stay motivated and stay focused to do those types of things. So,
yeah, yeah,
that's just an observation that I've kind of just reading some of the material, just kind of maybe come back and think on something like that. The other thing that I'm trying to do is when I know that when he gets, and I'm still sticking on homework because that seems to be a big area for us.
But can I just ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Did either of you get a chance to listen to the your After School Survival Guide webinar that we did last week?
I did. That was the hour-long one about, and I even wrote notes on that.
Oh, good. All right, good. And how was that?
I don't know. They're somewhere on my desk, but I did write notes.
Right.
One of the things that I'm trying to make sure is that, you know, my wife wants him to come in immediately and start doing his homework, and, you know, and I want him to come in and kind of decompress a little bit, try to get some food in him. To give him some energy, to give him some focus and those types of things, and try to do a little bit of physical things, meaning, you know, we do the wheelbarrow stuff. And
yep.
Now that the weather, well, some days it's nice, some days it's not nice, I try real hard to get out with him and ride his bicycle. And this is a huge milestone. Around my neighborhood, it's about a half a mile or so, and we have two hills that that he has to go up. And up until last week, he always had to walk up the hills. And so one day he was able to actually go all the way up one of the hills. I mean, I was egging him on. It kind of helped because there were some neighbors outside too, and they saw he was struggling, and they egged him on, and he got up the hill. And so we were all just going crazy and giving high fives and fist bumps and all that stuff. But the next day he was actually able to do both hills without getting off his bicycle. And, you know, he's almost 10 years old, and let me tell you, that was, you have no idea, I felt like having a party for him,
right.
Because that was a huge milestone for him as far as self-confidence and, you know, giving him some, you know, strength, so to speak, and believing
great.
In himself perspective. So, I mean, that was one, I thought about that, I said, I got to tell everybody, because that was a huge, huge thing for him to be able to do, because it took him a long time to be able to do that kind of thing, so.
Well, and what I love about what you're sharing is that it seems simple, but for him it was a big, big milestone. And by accomplishing it one day, the next day he was able to do both hills. And it's like that. It's like once they believe that they can, it's significantly more possible for them that they can, right? Because if they
right. And he's done it once
likely.
Or twice since then. So
yeah.
I try to get out with him at least, you know, 2 or 3 days a week.
That's
to get him,
great.
And I get on my bike, and we'll just kind of go around the block and ride a little bit. So it was, again, I think, well, at least my son has issues with self-esteem and I mean, he's an extremely intelligent person, but he isn't very athletic and coordinating all those types of things. And so any type of thing that he can do to give himself some confidence
is a
good thing. So.
Yeah. Thanks. And Cheryl, you've just joined us. Hi and welcome.
Hi. Sorry, I'm late.
How are you? So we're just
good.
Doing a quick and bottom line check-in of how things are going before we move into the topic today. What's up for you?
She's doing good.
Okay. Well, that's a simple answer. So that's awesome, actually. We have a small group today, so you'll have plenty of opportunity to share a little bit more. So let me just ask everybody to take a minute to take aim, target what you want to focus on today, and then we'll move into our content for the day. So where do you feel like you want to focus this week? We're in the next couple of weeks. And it's interesting because I've had a conversation a little bit with Rebecca before the call started, and Cheryl's coming on saying, yeah, she's doing all right. That, you know, we're at that place of the year where the systems are sort of in place and it's starting to work and you're not trying to take on too much. You're doing one thing at a time. And things are sort of, for a lot of you in this group, leveling out. It's sort of going pretty well, right? So that enables you to look either to yourself or to, you know, more narrow focus to try to tweak little things instead of feeling like you're trying to handle overwhelming problems. So having said that, what do you want to focus on? Whatever you want is fine. Rebecca, you want to start?
I am going to focus on the sleep issue to see if we do need to do something about it or not.
Okay. So, and the trouble is that he's having trouble sleeping.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Okay, Dave, what about you? And reminding you to bottom line, what do you want to focus on?
I'm interested to focus on the topic of today is compassion, and I refer to it as compassion and being patient.
Okay. So focusing on your reactions, your patience and your compassion.
Correct.
Okay. And Cheryl?
I think I'll focus on patience also, like my own, because I wrote a couple weeks ago about I had that great homework session with my daughter, and then a couple nights ago I did homework with her and I told her to shut up twice.
Oh,
I just had no patience with her. She was making so much noise, like thinking. She was thinking with, you know, noise accompaniment.
Right. Well, and that may be a good lesson for you to know that she needs to be able to verbalize in order to think. Some people are external processors.
Yes, she is. And I think I used to feel a lot worse, though, about that I would tell her to shut up, because at least now I do have good memories. There are times when the homework did go well that I can fall back on.
Well, and just to make you feel a little better, I was laughing because I was talking to a client that I'm working with privately, and who's also a member of the groups, and I had I had used a quote that she had written in some of our materials as we were promoting homework headaches about how things were going well and homework, an example, and she called to say she had this bad homework night. So, you know, you're going to take three steps forward, then you're going to take one step back. And that doesn't mean you failed. That means you pick yourself up and you keep moving forward, right? And you tweak
right.
it and figure out what went wrong. So,
she did well on the test, so.
There you go. Silver lining. So, let's talk about today's topic. Today's topic is compassion. And like several of the topics we've talked about the last few weeks, this is not a new concept for any of us, right? We all understand what compassion is and what it means to show caring and concern. I like to think of compassion as sort of tied up with acknowledgement, that it's about getting into someone else's head and perspective and seeing the world through somebody else's eyes, right? Really having caring and sort of an authentic concern for how someone else is feeling or experiencing something in the world. So I think the reason compassion is so important for us as parents is because whether we have ADD or not, and a lot of us do, we have to remember that this is hard stuff for our kids. And what they see their friends doing and doing readily or easily is hard for them, and that's frustrating for them. And they get upset not only because they're not doing what we want them to do, but they know they should be able to, or they think or feel they should be able to. And so they're disappointed in themselves on top of our disappointment in them, right? Sort of what you said, David, that addresses self-esteem gets impacted here because they start to sort of have that feeling of, I can't win, right? And I'm not making them happy. I'm not making me happy. And they don't quite understand why they can't do something. And so it's hard for them, and they can't. And so they sort of assume they're lazy, crazy, or stupid. And that tends to be where they go, is either something's wrong with me. Well, in some way, something's wrong with me. So bringing compassion to our kids is about starting to look at where they're coming from through their eyes and feeling how hard it must be and really getting a good understanding of what their experience must be like. And then going from there, planning from there, making decisions from there with that understanding. So, you know, Cheryl, the example you use, she's talking out loud, right, while she's doing homework, to understand, I really want to understand this, and I can't if I don't say it out loud. Like, okay, if I, 2 plus 2, I'm just using stupid math, but 2 plus 2 is 4, then what happens when you add a 5? You know, that she has to externalize that and speak it out loud for you to have compassion that, wow, it's hard for her to process this information. It doesn't just come naturally. She really has to think about it. That makes a big difference for her. So that's sort of compassion in a nutshell. I will tell you that it's probably the number one coaching tip that I use with everything else with parents. I think that there's almost nothing we do or apply or use, no strategy we implement that doesn't require some level of compassion from us, either for our kids or for ourselves or for our siblings or our spouses, or for the teachers and the school that we work with. On the call the other day, part of the compassion conversation we had was about having compassion for what's happening in a kindergarten classroom with a bunch of kids and then having an ADD kid who's, you know, impulsively calling out all the time. And that's got to be a hard experience for the teacher. So it's not just about bringing compassion to the kids. It's about really always trying to take that perspective of understanding where someone else is coming from and coming from that with some kind of a caring or respect. And that's why I think I tie it with acknowledgement, because the compassion, when we bring compassion to our kids, oftentimes if we start by acknowledging what they're experiencing in the first place, you know, to say, wow, this must be really hard for you, or I get you're really frustrated, and then to add to it, you know, like Dave, you were saying, and then to cheer them on, I know you can do it. I know it's hard, and I believe in you. I know you can do it. That makes a huge difference. So what's coming up for anybody? What thoughts are coming up for you? Questions, stories? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, how do I encourage my spouse to have compassion?
Okay, say a little more.
I know, you know, we have, each of us has a role that, you know, he's kind of the heavy and stricter, and I'm kind of the, you know, more lax, more give kind of a chance, and especially when it comes to things that don't matter as much to me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something that I probably approach life in general with a lot of compassion, and I think that's not the case for my spouse. Although he is a very caring person, I think he just doesn't realize that it's kind of as, I don't care, it's my way or the highway. Just,
right.
You know,
it's not his natural go-to. Right.
No.
So what tends to stimulate compassion for you?
Oh, anything. I get sucked in way too easy.
So does anybody else on the call have a harder time sort of connecting with compassion?
I do.
Okay.
Me too.
Okay, so both of you. So I know Rebecca to know that Rebecca's naturally is a social worker by profession. So social workers have a tendency to be a little more caring, compassionate, right? So Dave and Cheryl, what ties you into compassion? What helps you find it when it works? Cheryl, let me ask you, because we've done some work together on this, around this issue with your daughter. How have things changed for you with her since you shifted the way you look at her from that compassion perspective?
It's definitely easier, or I have to remind myself about compassion, but it's easier to do that now.
Okay, and, so it's coming more naturally. When we first started focusing on it, do you have any memory of what helped you do it?
Well, I think I just didn't really believe or understand that it was hard for her because it isn't for me, or, you know, like that was some of her things or have never been an issue for me. So I just couldn't really believe that. I mean, I thought she was being like obnoxious and just, you know, rebellious or something, or whatever kind of negative thing I could think of. But I don't know, maybe talking it over with you helped me see that she is really trying, and, you know, she struggles with these things, and it's not that that she's trying to be bad or whatever. It is just hard for her.
Okay.
She doesn't remember things. And also, you know, I did get a lot of, like, additional testing at school, and it really showed, like, statistically that she's different than the other kids. And, you know, she scored really, really low on memory issues,
mm-hmm.
very, very
yeah.
low. And so...
So, therefore, you had this sort of, you also had a quantifiable experience.
Yes.
Right. You were able to see it not only from your own experience of saying, wow, I don't understand that, but also you saw it in print in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Rebecca, I'm sure you have a psych ed report of some variety, right?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even, like, referred to that lately, but yeah.
So as you're listening to what Cheryl and Dave, anything you want to add about, you know, because clearly compassion may not be your natural, but you have sort of come to a whole place around it in the last 6 months. So anything you want to add about what's worked for you?
No.
Still a struggle.
Yeah, well, it is. I guess it's because maybe it's just part of, I mean, I'm an extremely competitive person. I mean, I'm in sales. That's what I do for a living. And, you know, I mean, it's dog-eat-dog out there. And, you know, if I don't make the sale, you know, I always say I can't put shoes on my kids' feet. And so I'm just naturally not compassionate from that perspective. And so, you know, I guess part of that is maybe it's just me or just men in general. You try to be tougher to the kids, tougher on them because it's a tough world out there.
Yeah.
And that translates into a lack of compassion to a certain degree, I think.
Okay.
And that's probably, I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but, I mean, I'm just trying to think, you know, I have to try to remember to, as best I can, even though all these tasks that we think are extremely simple to do, like, for example, getting dressed without having been asked, ask them 10, 15 different times, and to keep moving, and to eat breakfast, and to continue all those types of things, which to us are just simple day-to-day normal activities. To them, they struggle with, and trying to understand from their perspective to allow you to have that compassion, that's what's difficult. for me.
Right. Right.
It's probably a long answer.
It's difficult, but it feels like, you know, so you have to remind yourself of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right? I think that's part of it. You have to, constantly remind yourself of it through repetition that he's just 9, he's just a kid, you know, he has trouble doing these types of things, those things, so.
You know, one of the strategies that's in Homework Headaches for this, that sort of ties into this a little bit, is to create a mantra for yourself, and I don't mean the word mantra in the yogi meditation sense, but the reminder when you figure out, like, oh, that's hard for him, I can help him with that, right? Something that's in your mind is like, oh, he's frustrated, oh, he's upset, oh, he's scared, and to help identify what's going on for him that you can help address and do something about instead of he's being disrespectful to me, right? That sort of being over there, looking over there. And Rebecca, I'm not sure how this is helping or not helping.
Well, I think just hearing Dave's perspective on it, I think, you know, I think it is, to some degree, you know, maybe a more male experience, just kind of that toughness. So my husband may kind of come by it naturally, and, you know, I have not been able to successfully convince him that, you know, my way is probably also the wrong way. Like, we just need to meet, I feel we need to meet somewhere in the middle.
So rather than convincing, where do you two have alignment? What is it that you both want?
We haven't really discussed it like that before in those terms. Like, there might be specific issues that have come up at various points. Like, you know, we both think he should, you know, be sleeping by 9:30. Let's just, you know, say that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's not a very good example because it's something that you don't have control over when you fall asleep, but
right.
That would be the sort of thing, like, you know, he should do his – I mean, that's – you know, honestly, I think we differ on a lot of things, you know, whether or not he should – you know, some days he can come in and do – my son is capable of doing his homework right away, banging it out because, you know, he doesn't get that much homework, which is another issue. So I'm, like, scared for the future of what kind of homework load and how he will handle that. So I'll need that that seminar, the webinar. So sometimes he can come and just do it, and other days, you know, I can, you know, he's staying outside when we get home, and I'll say, do you want to play for 10 minutes and then come do your homework? And he says, yes. I say, okay, but in 10 minutes, you have to come in. You know, like, my husband would never, ever, ever offer him that.
Mm-hmm.
Homework before play.
That's my husband's
mantra.
Right. So what are you solving to here? Because you've got sort of two issues. You come up with a sleep issue earlier. And
right.
Then sort of the issue of how do I help my husband be more compassionate.
Right. Which one am I going to do?
Well, even before that, the question that I posed just in terms of all of that communication with him, because what I'm hearing, mm-hmm. really, it's about decision-making and working together as a parenting team, right, finding your middle ground.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the question that comes up for me is, you know, we have a tendency, we humans have a tendency to disagree about how something should be done and then start trying to convince each other that we're right. Does this sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. She says exhausted.
Yeah.
So the change in approach, and it actually comes, compassion sort of ties into it some, because you have to be willing to respect another position.
Absolutely.
Is instead of looking to agreement, we look to alignment. We put the problem out in front and say, okay, what is it? What do we both agree on? We might both agree that we want our kid to be raised in an environment where he feels loved and supported. We might both agree that we want our kid to be able to learn to become successful at school. So that we're not agreeing on how, we're agreeing on a larger vision or goal state. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And so once you put the problem out front and you find that place where you're both aligned, then you can begin to have a conversation about how that's not tied into convincing, right? And as soon as you notice you're trying to convince someone, there's no real way to find true sort of collaborative resolution because you're at odds with each other. But if you're in alignment, then you can keep working and tweaking and changing until you find a solution that you're both comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of co-parenting, there's a larger conversation here for the two of you.
Right.
It's about where are you in alignment and what is it that you can both clearly want for him? And then going from there to figure out how. And then taking aim one issue at a time. If you try to handle everything, what's going to happen?
Blow up.
Right. Or it'll get diffused either way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you target and say, you know, first you set the groundwork for where are we in alignment about him.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it's, okay, let's look at the homework issue, let's look at whatever. And then you can talk about and bring compassion in, not as a, I want to convince you to be more compassionate, but as
right.
a, I find that when I bring compassion, here's how it helps.
Mm-hmm.
And he can say, when I bring firmness, here's how it helps. And then you can find your middle.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
I think it could. The sleep issue is a little more hot button because my husband has difficulty sleeping, and so I just,
so what
I'm
a great
sure.
opportunity for him to be compassionate.
Oh, he's very compassionate about that. We don't have
cool.
an issue with that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not the issue with that one.
Great.
So
let's check in with other people and then we'll come back. Anybody else about and sort of what's going on with you around compassion right now, or what you're thinking about or aware of? Okay. Anybody want?
I'll
go ahead.
Well, what happens for me is compassion ends up derailing me and distracts me.
Say more.
Well, because then I end up thinking, like, if it's someone else's issue, I kind of get sucked in. And then I, you know, end up either being on the phone too long with the person who's having a problem or... You know, I'll hear, oh, this person needs something. I'm going to go research it a little bit. And then, like, I'm not doing the stuff that I need to be doing.
Mm. So it's a whole different place that it's showing up in your life that you know, it sort of ties into your whole caring, wanting to help other people.
Right.
Right. So for some people, compassion is what actually helps set limits, and for you, it actually pulls away some of yours.
Yes, for sure.
Wow. Anybody else, Cheryl or Dave?
Nope.
Well,
one thing that...
On this one. What?
One thing that did change, I guess, over the last 6 months or whatever is my daughter got on medication and really... stuck with it, and it's really improved her behavior. So it's been easier for me too.
Okay.
And now we can. She even said to me last week or so ago that she could tell a difference when she wasn't on the medication.
Wow. So you got her buy-in to the process.
Yes.
And you know, there's a lot to be said for knowing what your limits are and getting. And using other kinds of external circumstances to help you when you need help or to help them when they need help, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got lots of pieces you've had in place for the last couple of years or year and a half or so
learning how to manage this. And there are lots of pieces. There's brain activation for her. There's training for you. There's, you know, it's not just one thing.
Right. But the medication really helps with the, you know, the low-level stuff, like the talking
right.
all the time while other people are talking and the totally being distracted and not following through. Like Dave was saying, go get your breakfast, go get your breakfast, go get your breakfast. You know, like I don't have to do that as much when she's on medication. So it's definitely easier.
So it allows more space for you to be compassionate in other areas too.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I say to her, look, you are not an airhead and you are not lazy. I know that. You just have trouble in these areas sometimes,
right.
you know. Because she's not. I mean, she is forgetful or she can't remember where she put something or you know how it is with the kids.
Yep.
But she's not an airhead. So.
Right. So, so just sort of looking at the issues that all of you brought to the table, does anybody want to focus on any one of your issues? Because both you, Dave and Cheryl, you were both talking about patience. So, Dave, what's coming up for you in terms of patience in this conversation?
What's coming up for me in patience?
When do you get impatient?
When? Frequently.
No, specifically, like what's happening that you get impatient about?
Well, a lot of times, I mean, it most of the time it revolves around when I or my wife request that our son do a task.
Okay.
And it can be any type of task. It can be from go take a shower, get dressed, eat, clean up the playroom, all those types of things. And it's, we think, or I think it's something that should be done within a certain time period. And it's usually less than 5 minutes. And it drags on for 15, 20 minutes. Then I get impatient.
So what's important about it being done in 5 minutes?
What's important about it being done in 5 minutes? Because then he can go do something else I need for him to do. Whatever that may be. And maybe a lot of times it has to be done quickly because he's got to go to school or he's got to go to bed or the homework needs to be completed prior to eating dinner or whatever that may be. There's something, and we try to dangle, if you will, a carrot out there for him that says, hey, you know, you're not going to get a snack until you complete this task, like after dinner. You can't get your bowl of ice cream until you complete your task. And he's like, well, we had that first. Let me do this first. Or can I do it while I'm doing it? We're like, no, this is what you need to do. And it turns into a fight or argument, and then we get impatient about that too, or frustrated
right.
about that. So, I mean, it's a good point. Why does it need to be done in such a short time period? I guess part of it is my mentality of how long I think the task should take, which is not necessarily a good way to look at it, but that's just the way that I look at it, number one. But number two, there's usually something else that needs to be done. Like,
okay.
for example, if, you know, if we have to go somewhere, go to church on Sunday mornings and, you know, trying to get them out of their pajamas into clothes, which, you know, how long does it take to get dressed? A couple, 3 minutes, and it's like 5 or 10, and he's laying on the floor, and I'm like, get up, get dressed.
So what do you know about that? How long does it take you to get dressed?
How long does it take me to get dressed?
Yeah.
A couple minutes.
Okay, how long does it take him to get dressed?
5 to 10.
How long does it really take him to get dressed?
When he actually does it, a couple minutes.
Okay, no, but to, for him to just sort of to get dressed and be able to space out or dally around or whatever, how long does he really need? 5, 10, or 15?
10.
10 minutes.
Yep.
Okay. So what happens when he has that time, when you give him that time?
When I give him that much time,
yeah,
I'm just trying to think. Like Sunday mornings are usually the biggest challenge. He's usually up in his room fiddling with something. He's got little, he's a little case of magnets. He'll be playing with those. He loves Pokemon. He'd be looking at his Pokemon cards. I mean, sorting them out. He's like a Pokemon expert. The guy has everything memorized. It's very crazy, bizarre, but he loves it. Anyway, he's kind of piddling. A good word I'll use is piddling, or putzing around.
Right. So he needs putzing around time in the morning, particularly on the weekends when there's no school, because he's been getting up and getting out every day for school.
Yes.
Okay.
But usually, you know, on the weekends, he's up at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. He goes into the family room. We have a family room upstairs, and he'll go in there, and he'll be watching some kind of cartoon or something.
Right.
Prior to that, right?
So tell me.
So,
what,
I mean, he's sitting there watching.
So tie in a little bit to compassion. Can you remember what it felt like to wake up as a kid on a Saturday, Sunday morning?
Yeah, I got up and I watched cartoons.
Okay. Did you have to get up and go anywhere?
No.
Okay. Do you remember feeling like just, you know, like you owned the world? It was your space, your time.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Okay. So, what do you think's happening for him? When he's not getting up and getting out the door.
It's probably that same attitude, same mentality.
Okay.
I would suspect yes. I mean, you know, I didn't grow up like Sunday mornings we go to church, and so he usually gets up and watches cartoons for, you know, an hour or so or whatever, and then we kind of make him eat, and then we're scrambling to get out the door in time. I didn't have that as a child. I didn't grow up in that environment, so
right.
I mean, I kind of had the whole weekend to kind of dilly dally putz around, so to speak, where he's basically
so you
just
can, you have some compassion for how much he might like just having some dilly dally time.
Yeah, I can probably try to, but I guess, you know, the dilly dally time, I also consider that the time that he's awake watching cartoons, that to me is dilly dally time too, so to speak.
Right. So
and when once, you know when he's
you
had
that
hour
effort,
and a half hours to do whatever, and it's time to go, we got to go.
So let's use the model for a minute, because we're sort of shifted here. And for you, what I really hear is it's not about your patience. It's about where the impatience is showing up is getting out the door to go to church, right?
Yes.
So if we take aim on that and then we get some education, what do you know? You know that he likes time to dilly-dally. He needs time to get ready. He doesn't do as well when you're rushing him. Anything else that we know?
Those are good.
Okay, so now you got four choices. You can activate the brain, shift expectations, parent positively, or use systems and structures. Which feels like it's the most applicable?
Probably not activate the game, get brain.
Okay.
Maybe shift either expectations or systems and structures.
Okay, or a combination of the two.
Correct.
Okay. So what expectation have you been placing that hasn't been working?
I guess it's the urgency. And, it's, you know, I'm gonna use the word urgency only because it gets
mm-hmm.
down to a point that we're time crunched, and so it becomes urgent to get dressed and get out the door.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, I've tried tactics – like for dinner is another example. You know, I say, guys,
don't go to dinner. Stick.
I know. I'm just saying, but the tactic would be perhaps I could say, okay, guys, 5 minute, 10 minute warning, 5 minute warning, 2 minute warning. You know, we gotta go, type of thing.
Okay.
As a potential system or structure to put in place, to know that his time needs to be wound down and he needs to get moving.
Right. So you've got two things here. You're setting the expectation that he needs a little time to transition or adjust, right? Giving
yes.
him a warning, and then putting a system in place that you're going to give him that warning, right?
Okay.
The other question that comes up as I'm hearing it is, if getting dressed and ready is the part of the stressor, what if he were already dressed and ready before he has his downtime?
We've tried that.
Okay.
We've put his clothes out the night before, and we've told him, when you get up, get dressed.
Mm-hmm.
Does he do it? No.
Okay, so if he does do it, does he get to watch television?
Yes.
If he doesn't,
so maybe,
what happens?
But he usually gets up so much earlier than we do, so we
don't want to have to get up. Yeah. Totally get it. Never put a system in place that's going to be harder for you to enforce than it is for them.
it's valid. In other words, you know what? That would be okay as long as I would have to actually physically get up and make sure that he was dressed prior to doing that.
Kate, is there a remote control for the television?
Yes, there is.
So what if the remote control were in your bedroom?
Then he'd come and wake me up then.
Well, but he would just have to, I mean, it wouldn't wake you up that much.
I know, but you know what? That is a good tactic to have it in our room, in that in order for him to get the remote control, he has to be dressed.
Right. But so hear the language. Watch your – so take that from a compassionate approach instead of, in order for you to do this, then you get that. Shift the language a little bit with compassion.
Wow. I'm thinking as a reward, perhaps, or as a incentive for you to watch television in the morning. You need to be dressed, and in order to do that, you got to come get the remote in our room.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's compassionate, but
it's close. It's closer. How about something like, I know that you hate it when we rush to get out the door, and I want to make sure you're ready so that nobody's stressed out. So here's my suggestion. What do you think about it? How about if we keep the remote in my room, and when you're dressed and you're ready to watch TV, you come get it?
I don't know.
So that
you know
way,
what? I would. I'm not sure how he would react to that. I think he would
be
what to say.
He might not know what to say. That's okay.
But I'm going to try it, though.
Nothing better than stunning your kids into submission, right? I'm kidding. But I mean, the idea is to acknowledge it's hard for you to get out the door fast. You don't like it when we rush, and we don't want to rush you. We want you to enjoy your Sunday morning before church. So here's a plan. What do you think? Help us come up with a plan that's going to work for all of us. I've got a client I work with, and we call it co-creating, when she and her son sit down to co-create a plan. But do you hear
that.
How that starts with compassion for his experience? And what a difference
well, will,
that makes
I'll
for
give
him,
you an update.
Because it's no
I'll
longer,
give you, an
you have to do this
because I'm
going to
try it this week. So.
Okay, but I want you to hear the distinction. It's not about
I
need him to get out to church, right?
Right, but it's all a matter of presentation to him. I get
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, good. So what do you feel, what's your clarity from this little laser coaching moment?
I think it's all in the way of you, way of approach and presentation, you know? I mean, it's you can be direct, but, and then you can kind of soften the blow. I mean, just in communication and learning the right way to communicate, to have compassion as opposed to being more authoritative and dictatorial. You know what I'm saying? In other words, as parents, sometimes when we get frustrated and become impatient, we get angry and we get more authoritative in our requests to our children, whereas with a compassion slant, so to speak, it's a little different spin in the way you're communicating to them. Still getting across the same point, but in a different, softer, more compassionate route.
So a great observation. Let me apply it to something different for you. You said you're in sales, right?
Correct.
When you're trying to sell something, do you tell them what to buy?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay.
In other words, I'll say, we have a certain option. If I give them one or two or three options, I'll tell them, you know, based upon your environment, what you're trying to do, and these options, here's the one I think you should do.
Right.
I always say, if you want my opinion, or in my opinion, this is the route you should go.
Right,
and
so you're giving them choices. But you're not telling them what to do. You're enrolling them in the process and then offering them some expertise.
Correct.
Right.
But if you were out there saying, buy this, buy this, buy this, you wouldn't get very far as a salesman.
Correct.
You have to, they have to want it. You have to engage them in the process. You have to understand what they're looking for in the first place so that you can advise them on what's best for them. And I believe that parenting is a lot like sales. Huge amount like sales. In fact, I have a
You're absolutely right. And it's all in the way it's presented, you know?
I have a marketing coach that I work with that I've been talking to her about. I want to write a book about parenting and sales because I think that they're the same thing. Because it's all about enrollment. Because at the end of the day, sales is service, right? We're selling stuff because we believe the product we're providing is what they want and is good for them and is going to benefit them. And the same thing is true for our kids. We're trying to help them do things because we know it's what's good for them. So you have a lot of expertise in expert parenting, but you just know what is sales.
Right.
And you're challenging.
So when kids complain, sorry.
Go ahead,
when
Cheryl.
Kids complain, that means that's a signal they want to buy. Right? It's a buying signal when they complain.
Well, they want to take it back, whatever they bought.
So then you coach to the objection, right?
Right.
I mean, it's really the same thing. And both of you, Cheryl, you too, both of you are in sales. And
yeah, I've been very much in sales, yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much the same thing. If you tell somebody what to do or what to buy, they're going to push back. But if you enroll them in the process and you bring them along and you understand what it is that's really best for them, because you got to provide the product that's really the right fit, it's masterful. So if you can master sales, you can master parenting. That's my message here today.
Wow.
Well, it's funny, too, because Dave was talking, like, I've had so much the same situation with my daughter, the taking forever and trying all kinds of different things. She took 6 hours to clean her room last weekend. 6 hours. Because she was in there laying on her bed watching videos. She wasn't cleaning her room.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get mad about it because we did have time. I totally relate to that time crunch or feeling anxious because we got this to do and that to do and come on, you know.
Yep.
But I have to give her like a sense of urgency or like I have to give her not necessarily a times that, but give her some immediacy, like, okay, you have 10 minutes and that's it or something. That
right.
seems to work sometimes with her.
That's one motivator is urgency, but she needs some structure. And I'm not saying you never provide structure, but I mean, when one of my kids, we finally figured out mornings were a nightmare for us for years. And we finally figured out she needs an hour and a half in the morning to get ready. Not because it takes her an hour and a half to get dressed, but because she needed that, forgive the term, brain fart time, right?
Yeah.
She just needed, and I don't need it in the morning, but she just needed that piddling around time, and she needed a lot of it. And when we finally started waking up, like, 45 minutes earlier, it changed everything. Now, it was hard on me because I'm not a morning person. And eventually, I got myself out of it. It's like, it's great. You can wake up that early, but I don't have to. But at first, I had to help her get into the process. And now she doesn't need that much time to get out the door. But now, I mean, now she's 19, and she can get up and out in an hour, and it used to be an hour and a half. But she needs that hour. And I was the kind of kid that was like, get me up and out of here in 20 minutes. I just want the last bit of sleep I can get.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you really have to know who they are and create the systems that work for them. So let's sort of bring this conversation to a close. You know, look at your final four questions. What do you feel like you focused on today? And what's your clarity from today? What are you taking away? What's one action that you want to commit to? And how do you want to set yourself up for success?
I am going to talk to my son about getting ready in the morning because we've been doing some strategies on that and see if he does want more piddling time in the morning.
Okay.
And we'll make some decisions based on what he says.
Cool. Okay. Anybody else?
I'm going to try the same thing. I'm going
to
start
sales training days.
Yeah, I'm start just for the weekend on Sundays, and then we're going to tackle the weekdays. That's going to be a little more of a challenge, I think, because we have two boys, and they're both pretty grumpy in the mornings. So.
Well, the next program we're doing after homeworks is going to be called Morning Mania, just so you know.
Okay.
But so, and I like the way you're breaking it down. So first take aim on weekends. Start with Sundays. Get it comfortable. And then you might even be able to use the Sunday morning, Saturday and Sunday mornings as a motivator on the weekdays.
Yeah, Saturday mornings are that they can do whatever they want. I don't care what they do on Saturday mornings.
But exactly. If you set that up, they can have it anyway. But if you set it up on Wednesday morning, you're saying, God, I know it's hard to get up today, but Saturday's coming. It's not that far. I know you can do this. You know, when they have a picture, a bigger picture, a context for what you're asking them to do. So that's that compassion thing. I know it's hard now, and remember, you get Saturday and Sunday. Or, you know, whatever it is. But one step at a time. Start with Sunday. And what's your commitment, Dave?
I think the commitment will be to have a conversation, actually for all four of us. My spouse and my other son included, because it's to strategize and put together a action plan, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and expectations of what it'll be when we do it here, and ask them for their input, ask them what they want to do.
Right. Love that. We call it family meeting. Whatever you want to call it is great.
To include their input.
Yes. And start with compassion. That's your challenge when you have this conversation, is to start by acknowledging what other people's experiences are, not just yours. It's not just, I want Sunday mornings to go better. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Cheryl, anything for you? Any commitment?
To remember to get their buy-in. That's a good reminder.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Great talking to you guys. As always, have a good week. Keep us posted
online.
And let me know if you need anything.
Take care.
Okay.
And
Cheryl or
Dave, if you go back to any of your old sales training manuals and you have something to share online, please feel free to talk to the other parents who are also salespeople in the group about what you've learned about the sales and parenting.
Sales and parenting are one.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they used to always tell us, with the customers talking negatively or saying, rejecting or whatever, that's a signal to buy, right? Because you
exactly right.
Yeah,
you start to,
not a bad thing.
Objection land, then you got something to work with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, gang. Y'all have a great couple of weeks. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.